Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, midweek action. Aston Villa, Man City, Aston La Vista, baby. We look back on an astonishing game against the champions. Meanwhile, in Luton, the Rice Man cometh as Arsenal kill Kenny. We'll look back on all the midweek games, and as the relegation battle gets wilder, so do Sheffield United. Run of losses, sparking change of Blades bosses. All those stories and more in this Totally Football Show. Listener, it's Thursday the 7th of December, and we've got a brand new Totally for you. One which is, by the way, available to watch in its kind of entirety on our YouTube channel, which is the Totally Football Show. Here with us, we've got Duncan Alexander from The Athletic.
Hello.
We've got Luis Miguel Echegaray from ESPN.
Jimbo!
And Mutant Chronicles. And we've got JJ Bull from TIFO.
Hello.
Hi, JJ. Only one member of today's panel has recorded a Christmas single.
That's right.
It's you, JJ.
I did do that once.
Yeah, not this year, I should say. You haven't done it.
It's a long time ago, about 10 years.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know where you can find it. Maybe online somewhere.
Okay, what's it called, JJ?
I think it's called Santa, I'm Still Your Boy. I think.
Why
it's
would you not
that.
Know what it's called?
Because I honestly wrote it so long ago, it was meant to be a demo. And then that story I was telling you off air where the producer, I'll just say it, he stole it and then gave it to a bunch of people to try and make money.
It's the spirit of Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
So, and it went on compilations and things.
Right, that's amazing.
Because this is, so often that's the story, oh, I just laid down my voice as a demo and it went, Steely Dan, for example. He was never meant
John
to
Lennon.
Be. Was he, what? Oh, yeah. I get you. Right. So, well, hey, listener, if you've got tech skills, hunt it down. Santa, I Stole Your Boy. By the way, that's what it's called.
I'm still your boy.
Oh,
he didn't steal my boy.
I thought you said Santa, I Stole Your Boy.
First of all, I think that's a great idea.
That's a movie, and I want to write
Santa
that now.
Santa, I Stole Your Boy.
Yeah, it's a really dark Christmas tale where Santa comes down the chimney and takes your children.
Take my money. I will watch that.
It's essentially the plot of The Snowman.
But he willingly went with it.
Is he a villain, really? He comes and steals a boy.
He was drunk on hot chocolate.
We don't know what, if he hadn't melted, we don't know what he'd have done this.
The MO, you know. Oh. But anyway, let's not go down that dark, dark. Santa, I'm Still Your Boy.
I think it's called that, yeah.
Good. All right. Moving on. Luis, good days to be an Aston Villa fan.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day.
There you go.
That's it. That's all I'm giving you.
Okay. Yesterday, you were saying that you would need a day to come to terms with what you saw at Villa Park against Man City. How are you feeling this morning? You ready?
I'm just about ready. It was, you know, obviously we're here to analyze the match and everything, but somebody that's been supporting this club for a very long time, it was extremely emotional. I cried. It was the best performance I have seen Aston Villa in my lifetime.
Good Lord. We'll come on to why very, very shortly. Quick roundup on the scores, though. Wednesday night at Villa Park, Aston Villa beat the Premier League and Champions League title holders Man City 1-0. A result that sees City slipping to fourth, 6 points off the top. Lols. While Villa move up to third, just 2 points behind Liverpool and four behind leaders Arsenal, who needed a last second header from Declan Rice to win away at Kenilworth Road in a fairly mad 4-3 with Luton on Tuesday. Elsewhere, Liverpool won 2-0 at Sheffield United in Chris Wilder's first game back at Bramall Lane. Bournemouth won 2-0 at Palace and continue to climb. They're now only 3 points off the top half. Fulham put 5 past Forest at Craven Cottage. Wolves whanged Burnley 1-0. Brighton came from behind to beat Brentford 2-1. And Man United beat Chelsea by the same scoreline, a game that you're watching, JJ Bull, on account of the pretty colours. We'll come on to that very, very soon. Thursday evening, Everton, Newcastle and Spurs, West Ham. Looking forward to those. But we're going to begin with tearjerker of the week. Aston Villa 1, Man City nothing.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Here they go. Carried a long way by Bailey. Lovely chop inside. Bailey! It's in! Big deflection, wrong foot, Ederson. And Leon Bailey puts Aston Villa in front.
There you go, Luis. Hi-ho, Aston Villa.
I have, well, at least when the final was when I had no words to say. My wife looked at me like, what is wrong with you? I was crying, I was tearing, because to me, what I have seen in the space of a year and change under Unai Emery is one of the greatest things I have seen in the Premier League. And people forget that this is a club that was relegated in 2016, almost falling to liquidation, constantly looking for identity over and over and over again. And, you know, the stats, I'm sure the boys here who are much smarter than me will echo some of the things that happened yesterday. But 14 home wins in a row for Emery, something Mourinho or Arsene Wenger never did. It could be 15 on Saturday. The fact that Pep Guardiola, you know, allowed 13 shots in the opening 45 minutes, which is something that has never happened. That's the analytical side. As a fan, as somebody that's watched this team from as a 12-year-old, it was remarkable. It was an incredible, poetic moment for an. Oh, I just wish I was there at Villa Park. It was an amazing experience, and I'll remember it forever. It was incredible.
Are you going to go along on Saturday for the Arsenal game?
I'm going to try if there's a Peruvian market in London that I have to help my aunt with. Okay. So if I can get away from that, I will try and make it. But I've been a couple of times already since I came back to England, and it's amazing. It's an amazing moment for the club, and I'm so proud of every single buddy that's you know, a member of this beautiful franchise.
You mentioned the 13 shots that City conceded in the opening 45. Has Pep ever seen any of his teams ever dominated in that fashion?
No. I mean, they let in 22 overall. I mean, City had two shots, the last of which was in the 11th minute. I mean, the old phrase, keep City quiet for the first 10 minutes and then you'll be fine, has never been more apt. It was astonishing. I mean, we've seen City lose games. We've seen them, you know, without Rodri not play as well, but not to be dominated like this. I mean, 1-0, massively flattered City. I mean, Villa took him to pieces in a way I don't think I've ever seen a Pep Guardiola team suffer that.
Yeah. And the thing about Unai Emery is that everybody's like just going crazy. I'm going crazy. Everybody. But he's the one that's saying, let's add cold water to this. Are we title contenders? No. Are we good enough to be in the Champions League? I think there's 7 teams better than us to do this. Mm. And the reason is because his whole mentality. And we have to remember as well of who he is as a person, where Mikel Arteta comes from, where Alonso comes from, where Iraola comes from in the northern province of Spain and, you know, in the Basque region. It's about, I went there when I covered Real Sociedad for a little bit, and it's everybody just wants to learn. Everybody just has this working class mentality of wanting to be better. And when you hear him speak, that's exactly what he is. He's trying to make you better. Leon Bailey, the winner of yesterday's game, is a perfect example of that. There was a moment, Jimbo, before Unai Emery came, where we were like, we need to cut our losses. Leon Bailey needs to be sold. Mm. And yesterday, he gave the best performance I have ever seen him play. It was amazing.
Who else do you want to pick out from this Villa side?
John McGinn is better than Zidane. Absolutely. He absolutely showed Rico Lewis what it's like to be a footballer. He turned him into Play-Doh. I thought Emiliano Martinez, Duncan was talking about the saves. He was tremendous once again. Ezri Konsa, the fact that he doesn't start for England is an absolute joke. I honestly think Bouba Kamara, who we got on a free, the best thing Steven Gerrard ever did for Aston Villa was go to his house and persuade Bouba Kamara to do it. But you can't really single anybody out. It was a complete united collective performance. And yes, I don't know where this season's going to take Villa, but I tell you this, it was not only the best performance, but it's opening the doors to a bright and clear future under Unai Emery.
I was going to say, with Man City, it's interesting that Guardiola is often associated with all the midfielders, and you've seen John McGinn turn Rico Lewis inside out. City's lineup, they don't really have any midfielders. It's loaded defenders. It's quite Mourinho-ish, really. So you've got 4 centre-backs with John Stones in midfield as another centre-back. Rico Lewis, you think of him maybe as a right-back who inverts, but he is more of a midfielder, really, that they're doing with him, playing really high. And so what you saw was basically Villa playing really compact and like vertically and horizontally and playing really brave, both in and out of possession, getting really tight to the man-to-man so City couldn't play through. And Guardiola after the game said that he saw the players weren't quite in the positions they were maybe supposed to be in at certain times, which you probably get if you had midfielders. So this is where you start seeing the effect of not having Gundogan or De Bruyne dropping in at certain times or having Bernardo Silva drop in the midfield as well.
Was he doing that because of the absence of Rodri?
I think, well, I mean, you play John Stones in that role that Rodri can do, and I think John Stones can do it, but Rodri, I mean, you'd know, will be one of the best midfielders in the world, and probably in his position, probably the best in the world at the moment at doing that. And so when you take those individual players, suddenly the system doesn't work quite the same, because although the system is built to make the players better as a unit, it depends on having really good players to perform those individual roles. So without him, they're not quite as good. But that doesn't take away from what Aston Villa were doing to them, because they knew exactly how to stop them. The pressing shape and where they wanted to win the ball back was exactly perfect. They had runners going in behind Watkins at stretching them. And then you see, as soon as they would then give the ball to City, they would drop back immediately really deep, really compact again, and you couldn't play around them. So there's nothing you could do. It was, really, really impressive. But interesting with City now, the way their team's looking, people say it's maybe a bit of a crisis, but it's not really, is it? They'll be okay.
Will they, though? They'll win.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're amazing. They won the treble last year. You're allowed a bit of a drop-off.
I mean, we have been here before in autumn, winter, when we're like, well, I think this might be the end for Manchester City, and then they just rise.
So City is still in the title race?
They're still in the title race.
But Villa in the title race?
I would say Villa in the title race. I think, you know, it is early, but there's a four, maybe even five-team title race, and that's exciting.
And that's the key difference. It's not that Man City's going weaker, it's that everybody's going stronger. Mm. Look at what Arsenal are doing. They're probably learning the lessons from Mikel Arteta. I'm sure we're talking about them. But Aston Villa is a perfect example of that. Now they have a team, a system, right? As JJ was saying, that, you know, can really press those great teams. So, I mean, listen, Rodri not being there, Kevin De Bruyne is a massive, massive thing. But you can clearly see that there is a... I mean, it's one of the most unpredictable, if not the most unpredictable, title race and a race for the Champions League spots as well.
I mean, they're missing Gundogan as well. I mean, that's the loss that people kind of overlook a bit, and that's one that isn't coming back. So, but I was thinking as well, Tielemans, you know, last year went down with Leicester... just looked terrible, but like was brilliant.
Well, it's funny, when I was walking up to the studio, our producer Charlie was saying how like he doesn't remember Yuri Tillemans running that much ever. Mm. And it's part of the Unai Emery way. I call it Aston Villa Unaiversity, because he makes every player just want to be better. And Yuri Tillemans, by the way, on a free from Leicester City, and he's turned him into a much better player. But it's not just him. It's the system that you learn, and that's the beauty.
And you buy into that when you're winning, right? So you see it's working, so players like Tielemans will do the extra bit. And things like Tielemans, the way he was running, would he'd try and start the press, lead the ball one way, and then it would go past him. Now, in the past, I think he would just mostly jog back into position. But against City, he was then running to get there, which makes all the difference with it.
Completely. I remember interviewing Danjuma back when he was still with Villarreal. This is way before Unai Emery came to Villa. And I said, what is it about Unai Emery that you enjoy so much about? And he's like, I never stop learning. I go in there and I learn something new. I go home and I learn something new. And that's exactly what you see here. And again, I don't know where this is going to take Villa. But when you have a project and an idea and a plan, anything is possible.
I mean, the Premier League is... you might not have all the best players in the world, but it has the best managers, and it's where every manager wants to come to and show what they can do. And I think Emery is a perfect example. I think obviously he had that spell at Arsenal, which didn't go perfectly, and I think that coloured a few people over here opinion of him. But I mean that surely changed now.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that, right?
But technically, it's Gipuzkoa that has the best managers, because as Luis was just mentioning, you've got Unai Emery, you've got
Alonso
leading the Bundesliga, Iraola doing wonderful things with Bournemouth, Aguacil at Real Sociedad, and Julen Lopetegui at nowhere. But of course, also, the man that Unai Emery is going to be facing on Saturday, Mikel Arteta. What's going to happen on Saturday then, when this Villa take on an Arsenal side who needed a 97th minute header to get past relegation strugglers Luton?
This will be a tougher battle, because...
for who?
For Unai Emery and Aston Villa, and at the same time for Mikel Arteta, but I was comparing it to the game against Manchester City. Obviously, any other kind of narrative, that's a ridiculous thing to say, but I just think, given the tools and the assets that Arteta has right now at his disposal, including, you know, a voluptuous Bukayo Saka who just doesn't stop creating chances or scoring, or Martin Odegaard, who, and by the way, I just think is just tremendous. But also, the midfield is the key.
And if they've got one for starters.
Exactly. And if Bouba Kamara can replicate what he did against Manchester City, McGinn, etc., then anything's possible. But it's going to be a cracking game. I was there back, way, way back, 98, I believe, or 99, the Julian Joachim years, and the, you know, those years under John Gregory, when it was a comeback at Villa Park.
Collymore on the near post, coming in behind him is Dublin! It's a goal! Dion Dublin has scored! And Aston Villa from two down are 3-2 in front.
Anything is possible, but I think it's going to be a really tough test.
Okay, what do you think? Arsenal's clash with Luton on Tuesday was pretty spectacular stuff itself.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game. Luton are an odd kind of creature to come up against because they play very vertically and they're very big lads, really fast, kind of big, tall, like physical opponents to take on. And so that doesn't mean they were not without strategy and what, you know, everything they're doing is working. But the goals they got are from corners, and obviously there's one that David Raya let through him like a ghost, which he maybe shouldn't do. Mm. And like Arsenal's defensive numbers this season are phenomenal. I think they're the best. They've got the best expected goals against. They've got things like the second fewest shots on goal, or maybe it's less now. That would make sense because City played afterward. Doesn't matter. But basically, they're very good defensively, but they've made more errors than anyone else that have led directly to goals.
Yeah.
And I think Luton forced a couple of those errors. Their corner routines, there's clear screening and blocking stopping them get in there. And that's where Arsenal couldn't deal with it because they're coming up against also really physical players. But Arsenal have built themselves as being really physical, so they'd be prepared for games like this. Mm. And that's the thing with Aston Villa when they come up against them. It will be a completely different game, because they give you something that other teams just can't do. And that's what you saw in the game. And of course, getting to the very last minute with that Declan Rice winner, it's a nice little narrative for them.
Having done it myself, there's few better grounds to celebrate a last minute winner than the away end at Kenilworth Road.
Tell us about yours, Duncan.
Well, just it's you can't sit down at that end because they just bolted on seats to some very ramshackle terracing. So everyone, if you're over 5'1", which most football fans tend to be, you can't sit down. So everyone's kind of stood up anyway. And it's just, I mean, there was...
Were there a lot of fans there for your goal?
I didn't score. I was celebrating a goal.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I thought he meant he maybe scored as well.
Yeah, no, I was picturing you with a last minute header.
Trust me, I've dreamt of scoring a winner at Luton, but sadly it hasn't happened. But, you know, the scenes there were tremendous. And it's an unscientific thing, but scoring late goals is what wins you titles. And Arsenal and Liverpool this season are doing
a
lot of
that. They do it so often, yeah. Mm. All right. And poor Luton, because you scored three goals against this Arsenal, and you still come away empty-handed.
Like David Raya.
Yeah, very nice.
But it's worth mentioning, 17th in the table. I know it's still obviously fighting the waters of relegation, but this is a true testament of who Luton can be for the rest of the season. Ross Barkley's playing... like 2013,
yeah,
Ross Barkley.
And
like,
Josh Townsend assisting Ross Barkley.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, they
old
say
school.
Time machines don't exist. There you go. There's one.
They turned Barkley into like a Moussa Dembele type. I saw someone say that on Twitter. I can't remember who, so sorry for stealing your bit. But it's definitely something he seems to be really good at. And it makes sense, right? Because he's not fantastic, amazing in the top end of the pitch, but when he does those same things deeper. So I saw a clip of Angel Gomez doing something. He was a Man United youth player who's always thought of as a 10 or a winger, and he's much, much better playing deeper because you can see the pitch in front of you, I guess.
Yeah, once he enters the box, it's quite a thing. By the way, I talked to Mikel Arteta this past summer about Declan Rice and Kai Havertz. And obviously we know that Declan Rice adds that leadership potential, the aura potential, but it is worth an argument that he could be the signing of the year for any club, just because he is that important. Comparisons to what Patrick Vieira did for Arsenal back in the day, the same thing. And Kai Havertz, yes, there's been criticism, but like every time he goes in there, he can add some kind of different component.
Different positions, but Rice to Arsenal reminds me of, you know, Van Dijk and Alisson to Liverpool when it was
definitely
like, all right, this makes the difference. This is actually the step up.
What about the man you described as Arsenal's other summer signing, with a four-letter name beginning with R, David Raya, in a tight title race? Is it Arsenal's keeper, whoever it is, that's going to cost them the title?
We've put a piece out on The Athletic today, actually, which myself and Nick Miller came up with a groundbreaking new theory, looking at the numbers. Basically, Raya's good at home, right? Ramsdale's good away. All Ramsdale's errors have come at the Emirates, and Raya's have come away, in fact, at Kenilworth Road. So why not just play Ramsdale in away games? He likes the banter with the fans. And then Raya can do some raking diags at home and everyone's happy.
Brilliant.
This is genius.
It is interesting because the Saturday, of course, they're going to be coming up against the man who they let go because they didn't need him, Emi Martinez.
Yeah, which should be interesting. I'm still conflicted why they got David Raya when you clearly see that. What happens in the January and the February, if something, God forbid, for any Arsenal fan, that Gabriel Jesus gets injured or even Eddie Nketiah, like, you need a striker sooner rather than
Jesus
later.
Was really good, actually, at Luton. Like, you wouldn't necessarily think of that being the sort of game that he'd thrive in, but he's so strong and he really sort of dug in and did a shift.
Holds the ball really well. Yeah.
Luton's the first time they'd ever scored three goals in a Premier League game.
Wow.
They're going to be back in the bottom three, though, if Everton win. They haven't played many Premier League games.
Yes, that's true.
But they'll be back in the bottom three if Everton win on Thursday night their game against Newcastle. And then Luton. You know who they have arriving at the weekend?
Who's that?
Man City. With Rodri, you imagine. They couldn't, could they? Could they?
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, it's true. There you go. Oh, it was an amazing game anyway. Aston Villa against Arsenal is Saturday at 5:30. JJ, ooh, you're doing a TIFO video, which you're putting out on Friday, called Santa, I'm Still Your Boy. No, that's not it.
It's called Unai Emery, I Stole Your Boy.
It's called How to Beat Arsenal. Is there anything you'd like to tell Unai?
Well, there's a couple of things, actually. I've actually changed the title because I've realised that's not going to work as well as I want it to.
Oh.
But I did the research looking at how you actually score against Arsenal, which is how I knew the errors thing. Hmm. So Arsenal's defensive numbers, like I said, are absolutely amazing. And if they hadn't committed those errors, they'd be beyond like the human mind's comprehension how good they are at stopping you from scoring against them. And a lot of that is by design because they built themselves to be so sturdy and their creative numbers have come down this season. Hmm. As a result, they're not quite as lovely to watch, but it gets results, damn it. And so one of the ways that you can definitely score against them is through corners, and you aim them always, either outswinging or inswinging, always to the edge of the six-yard box. It's exactly where Luton put them. West Ham have done it, Fulham have done it, Sevilla have done it. You just put it just the front, like if you divide the six-yard box into zones, like three zones.
Right.
It's the front one of those. You put it just in the far end of that.
Is that because that's just the kind of area of the corridor of uncertainty for David Raya? Do I come for it or not?
I think this is we're seeing the literal manifestation of the corridor of uncertainty. It's appearing now in exactly there because Raya doesn't want to come for it. Ramsdale's conceded from this as well, though, so it's not just him. So maybe it's the coach and they don't want him to come for those balls because it's just so difficult. But I was thinking of a few things about that and why it's interesting because the players who are taking corners, you can just coach them to always hit that same line, right? So it's coachable. You can make sure that the set piece delivery is always there. And then all you've got to do is, well, all you've got to do, but you just have to have blockers and screeners in place to stop players getting to that bit of the pitch. Another thing people don't do anymore is they don't really stick a player to mark David Raya or Ramsdale. They don't put anyone on them so that they're free to do whatever they want. And it creates that confusion.
Well, I'll tell you something, my friend. The one club that does do exactly what you suggest is Aston Villa. John McGinn, including as well Ollie Watkins, who usually likes to stand in front of the keeper, not just corners, but set pieces as well. And we have the master when it comes to really disrupting that box, and that's Douglas Luiz. Like, he's already attempted more Olympicos that have been very, very close over the course of the season. So this is music to my ears, Jay. The fact that set pieces are a key component for Villa is going to be massive.
Bin off that Peruvian market, Luis. Your destiny awaits you. Saturday, 5:30 at Villa Park. Ooh. Excellent. Next up, more things, including Scottish players are good and the first sacking of the season in the Premier League.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Before you get back to this Athletic podcast, did you know it's just one of many made by The Athletic every week? I'm Abby Patterson, senior producer here at The Athletic, and I get to work across so many of our shows. But even I have my favourites. Sometimes you're just too busy for a full-length podcast. I get it. We've all been there. Well, we've got a show to help you. Get up to speed with all the football stories you need to know about with our daily football briefing.
Stun and dusted. Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup.
Got a bug for the women's game? Then Full-Time Europe is for you. It's our dedicated women's football podcast answering the questions you're asking from the WSL and Champions League.
So what's going wrong at Arsenal?
But perhaps you want to know exactly how a team has set itself up. Then come to the audio whiteboard and join Michael Cox and our analytics gurus as they dissect and examine the game like nobody else can. That's on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen a striker who reads the game so well.
Just search The Athletic wherever you're listening to this podcast now, and you'll find your next podcast obsession in no time at all. Now, let's get back to your show.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Rue Lang says, please can you talk about how good John McGinn was? Tick. Oh, failing that, says Rue Lang. McTee was quite good. Scott McTominay can't stop scoring. Oh, also says Rue Lang, it's genuinely the transformation of Ryan Christie to a DM. This is down at Bournemouth that I'm most interested to hear about. Oh, Ian Lowell also saying Billy Gilmore is man of the match for Brighton on a routine basis, and McGregor scored a screamer for Celtic at the weekend. Scotland's midfield is not too shabby. There you go, JJ.
Pretty good. I expect we'll probably win all of the games from now on with all of those. But there's some good players for Scotland.
You have.
You get excited when they're playing well, but then it's funny because they look really good now because the national team does well, and Individually they do quite well. But when Scotland aren't playing well, I think they're very medium. But then, like, I always thought Callum McGregor would do very well in the Premier League, but he didn't leave, which is, makes sense because you play at Celtic and get Champions League football every single year as well. So that's kind of good. Yeah. McTominay, though, I absolutely love McTominay.
Yeah. We'll talk more about him later on. Sorry to tease you, Man United fan, but yeah, we'll do that. With all those Scottish players, though, Aberdeen not doing very well, your side. All the Aberdeen games in the Europa Conference League have been great fun, although not necessarily for Aberdeen fans.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the fans have a good time on their jollies, hanging out in the stadiums you get to go to, and that was the whole point, you get to go in these games. Something's not quite right, and it's mostly the players, the tactics.
the David Moyes.
Yes.
Second bottom. In the Scottish Premier
Second
League.
Bottom, yes. Lots of noise now that Barry Robson might be close to the end of his time as manager. Very inexperienced. He came in at the end of, the second half of last season, did very well, and naturally replaced Stephen Glass, and lots of fans then think, therefore, he must be the best choice. And so the more cynical amongst us think, well, come on now. The way this works now is you take your time, you choose a good manager who's proven themselves, maybe in a league like in Norway or Croatia, something like that, and you bring them in, you know, and they let them do what they've proven they can do. But then he starts to win three or four games in a row, and like, wow, this is it now. We're the best in the world. Let's give him a job. And then naturally, it doesn't work out.
You've got a cup final there coming up.
We're playing Rangers on the 17th, yes. I would like to not have to think about this anymore.
Okay, all right. I'm 17th.
I'm actually scared. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you know, cup finals, when you go to them and your team's terrible, none of it's enjoyable.
No.
It's like when you, like spooky roller coasters, and you think the best part about them is when the ride's finished, you know, and you're out and you've survived it and you're safe. Just don't go on the roller coaster and you get the same high. Some of this, they're going to the cup finals, is that if you don't go, you don't have to put yourself through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't go too far with that theory, otherwise.
You won't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
Well, I smell another Christmas song being written, I think.
Santa, I've stole your other boy.
Back to the Premier League, listener, because of course there's the first sacking of the season to report on. Premier League has one manager whose name sounds like his team's current predicament, fewer as of Tuesday. Paul Heckingbottom out. Chris Wilder back in. Wilder, of course, the man who Heckingbottom replaced 2 years ago, back from the wilderness. Or daytime TV. I loved his interview where he said, well, you can't say no to Sheffield United, and it's better than watching Bargain Hunt.
That's a knock on Bargain Hunt, isn't it? Then it has to be.
Managing your boyhood club is better than watching daytime
TV. I mean, that's obvious. There was no need to knock on Bargain Hunt.
Anyway, so the question I was going to ask about all this was, everybody remembers when Wilder was there last time, and they had that incredible run with the asymmetric fullbacks, was it, or centre-backs?
Overlapping centre-backs.
Overlapping, but there was an asymmetric thing in there as well, and there was John Lundstrom, probably it was him who was asymmetric, and they got all the way to ninth. Mm. Any way that he can work some of that magic this time?
No.
Oh. why is that?
Moving on!
Just standing there. Well, I mean, when they came ninth in the Premier League, they scored 39 goals in 38 games, which is a bit of a red flag. And then the following season, I think they had the worst start ever, even, you know, much worse than our friends Derby County. So, yeah, I don't think the Sheffield United is any better than that Sheffield United. So,
I mean, they've conceded 41 goals. They've scored 11. That's the worst in the Premier League. Obviously, it's going to be difficult to come back. Obviously, as we talked about, this season is even more competitive. But I'm with Duncan here. It's an almost impossible battle, especially when the likes of Luton and stuff are fighting.
They've got overlapping relegation battles these days.
Nice. They are 4 points from safety. A lot of reaction to the 2-0 defeat in Chris Wilder's first game back in charge at home to Liverpool on Wednesday was that there were lots of positives there. He'll have seen signs of life, spirit, etc. Did you subscribe to that interpretation?
I mean, they played okay, but I think it was more Liverpool playing in sort of second gear, really. I think
I 100% agree.
It's very much when a manager has his first game, it's like you look for signs. Sometimes those signs are there, sometimes they're not.
It reminded me a bit of that kind of McGregor-Mayweather boxing fight, which wasn't really a boxing fight at all, where he
what
just...
What was that?
Because Mayweather would then just... He just kind of let McGregor do whatever he wanted to. You know, that's fine. You have a little go, but really, I know I'll be able to win this whenever I want to.
Okay.
That's what I saw with that one. Yeah.
I see. Did you also see bits of Trent Alexander-Arnold that you weren't expecting?
On the assist
for the Virgil van Dijk opener.
Mm.
Was that... So basically, his shorts were lowered and you could see... it was not an assist, but an assist, if you will.
Yeah, a crack and go.
Was that intentional, do you think?
I mean, maybe. Maybe it's the new thing, you know. People have low socks and low shorts.
Nice. Slobber's lie, make it safe in stoppage time for Liverpool, who remain 2 points off the top. They go to Palace in the lunchtime game on Saturday. History there, much question mark. While Sheffield United will host Brentford at Bramall Lane. Do you know, there's only been one top flight meeting between these two clubs at Bramall Lane. Do you know when it was, Duncan?
Was this one of the Christmas Day games?
It was one of the Christmas Days in 1946. It was a Sheffield United 6-1 victory. Woof.
Yeah. Christmas Day.
What were they doing playing for? When did they stop Christmas Day?
They stopped in the early 60s, except there was one Blackpool game in the late 60s that they tried it again. Everyone was like, actually... leave it.
Right. So, people are up in arms this year about Boxing Day being...
Well, and Christmas Eve as well.
Oh, sorry, that's the one I meant. Mm. Yeah.
But they used to play one team at home on Christmas Day and away on Boxing Day or vice versa. So
right.
It's, you know, the traditions, they fall away. Like JJ's song, they're being lost.
Yeah. Very, very much so. Yes, anyway, so that's what Liverpool are going to be doing. They're going to Crystal Palace and Sheffield United host Brentford. But Palace... Istanbul, but also the ground where Liverpool have won 7-0, what else, 6-1. Oh, and also Roy Hodgson against his old side in and amongst a environment that's not exactly enamoured of his current managerial record. Boos on Wednesday as Palace went down to a 2-0 defeat to Bournemouth and suggestions that Roy could soon be exiting again the Crystal Palace bench in favour of Steve Cooper. Have you seen those stories?
Well, if this happens, please, just, this is it.
You think?
Bye, Roy.
Why, Louise? Why
let,
is that?
Let Roy have his time to relax now. He's done enough.
Yeah.
I mean, they said that.
Oh, I see. Right.
But that's my point. Yeah. Make this the final one, please.
12 months later.
You'll be back looking fresher than ever. Mm. But, I mean, I don't completely hate if it happens. I think Palace do need, specifically defensively, need to fix a few things. By the way, Bournemouth, you know, they are transforming themselves into a little mini Athletic Bilbao from the Bielsa days. Just Iraola is a student of his, of course. And they were very impressive against Villa in the 2-2 draw. So it's not like this is a shocking result. Bournemouth are definitely on the up.
Well, if they do get rid of Hodgson or he's just steps down, I think they should go braver and bolder. Because like we're talking earlier about how the league's got so many teams at the top in the title race. Same in the middle part. Loads of teams are really brave and bold and play quite... I don't want to say attacking, but they take risks, you get high reward from it, and people are seeing the benefit of that. And so Steve Cooper would come in and probably be fine, I'd imagine, because he's a decent manager, but I can't see it long-term as being a huge success. Maybe that short-sightedness on my part. But like Julen Lopetegui is available. Yeah. He would be the biggest name that's possibly there that you could snap up, throw some money at him. Maybe he can the start of a new dawn
right.
at Crystal Palace.
It's got that Basque magic as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, be adventurous with your decision. I agree.
Okay. Roy Hodgson's still very much in place as we record this, listeners. So got a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Oh, I do love
that. I mean, he got very grumpy after that game. He said that he said the fact is the fans have been spoilt here in recent times, which, have they? I don't know. I think
he keeps them in the Premier League.
I think that's the point. Yeah.
Well, also they had when he first came back, they had that run of games in which they scored goals and lots of them. Which
yeah, I think that's a bare minimum for fans, really. To
apparently not. Mm. Steve Cooper also, as we record this, still gainfully employed by Nottingham Forest. Although a lot of suggestions that that is very much a short-term situation after the 5-0 away at Craven Cottage on Wednesday, a performance which he himself said was embarrassing and not good enough, and certainly looks like Forest owner Evangelos Marianakis felt the same way, departing the ground early, and somebody found his pass thrown in a bush.
Yeah,
Dom Manning
littering.
Yeah, so
Craven Cottage has got a good history
bush,
of
perhaps just up there.
Yeah, Craven Cottage has got a good history of people storming out early. Remember, Adil Tarapt once got was he substituted
was that
or sent
the,
off
the
in,
bus?
Yeah, he
game.
Got on the bus. Yeah, mm. So yeah, it's probably. I mean, if anyone that's been to Craven Cottage, it's probably one of the best grounds to storm away from. It's
very easy to do.
Yeah, a lot of transfers. You could even get on a boat.
Yep, just jump on. It's right there.
Yeah. Very nice. Anything else about Palace against Liverpool on Saturday lunchtime?
Well, Joel Matip is suffers a massive injury, ACL. And obviously, this is a continuous issue for Liverpool. Once again, and this is going to be a problem, and so they're going to have to probably reevaluate what they need to do in January if they want to keep up, because I already have suspect question marks about the longevity of what they want to do with their midfield if they want to win this Premier League title. Obviously, we know how good they are, but now that Joel Matip is injured, that's a big loss.
Best wishes to him in his recovery. It looks like he won't be back for the rest of this season, and then his contract's up in the summer, so Question mark. All right, next up, we'll talk about an old Liverpool favourite and much more.
Hello, listeners. This is Matt Davis-Adams, host of Straight Outta Cobham, your dedicated Chelsea podcast from The Athletic. Myself and the motley crew of Liam Toomey, Simon Johnson, Dom Fifield and Luke Bosher are with you twice a week, every week this season, as we bring you all the news and views you could ever possibly want from in and around the club. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Luis, is Luis Suarez about to sign for Inter Miami?
Everything is pointing to that direction.
Woof.
Definitely.
That's a great sign.
A Barcelona reunion with obviously Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets, and obviously Lionel Messi. he played his final game with Gremio, and I think we will see him wearing that pink in Miami after the new year. It should be an interesting one for sure.
Okay. When does the season start again?
Well, the preseason begins in January, and then towards the okay. They haven't announced the official dates, but it's usually around the end of February, around that time. By the way,
yeah,
it's obviously a major move. It's a great marketing move as well to get Luis Suarez there, but he is really struggling physically. He has already been quoted as saying how, you know, I have to do a lot to be ready for matches. My son wants to one day play with me. There is no way I see that happening. So the MLS season, regardless of, you know, what, aside from the travel expectations and how much you have to do as well, when you involve a Leagues Cup in that situation, yeah. If Luis Suarez is still involved with the Uruguayan national team, it should be interesting.
Also, conditions in Miami, kind of challenging, you know, for an athlete.
You start sweating after 2 minutes in Miami. I know it too well. And I sweat when I blink, so I can tell you right now. That's a right. But yeah, it'd be a great move, definitely for MLS to see Luis Suarez.
Although maybe not from what you're saying.
And by the way, Copa America as well, you know, that summer, yeah. So...
Other exciting names who could be pitching up stateside include Frank Lampard, JJ, and former Villa manager Dean Smith. Not sure how fondly remembered he is for you, Luis, but
we love him.
Yeah, both among the finalists for the head coach vacancy at Charlotte FC.
Dean Smith's son, Jamie Smith, plays in USL, the next up division in South Carolina. So there's also a personal connection for Dean Smith as well. Yeah.
All right. And Saturday night, I'm talking about next season, but this season's going to have its grand finale on Saturday night with the MLS Cup Final, which is actually the league title, effectively.
Yeah, yeah. Columbus Crew against LAFC, which is, in many ways, a really great final to exemplify everything that MLS is about.
Why?
Columbus Crew are the OGs of MLS. They've been there from the very beginning. Their former stadium was the first soccer-specific stadium from an MLS club in America. They've won MLS Cup twice. This will be their fourth final. So, you know, there's a lot there. The Ohio soccer culture is really, really passionate.
Is it the Basque country of the United States?
Without the humble and the tapas. But LAFC, who are not even 10 years old, are looking...
How old are Columbus then?
Well, Columbus, with Christopher or the actual... from the very beginning, the 90s. Okay. Which is obviously not that...
No, but still,
when you compare, yes.
Relatively.
LAFC is only 9 years old, and now they're looking for their second MLS Cup back-to-back. Nobody has done that since their rivals, LA Galaxy.
Wow.
So Carlos Vela, the Mexican player, could be his last game because he hasn't extended his contract. There's a lot at stake. It should be a fantastic, fantastic final.
Cool. Good stuff. That's Saturday. What time is that going to be, Luis?
9 p.m. in the UK.
Is it? So, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, after...
Clash with any markets?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Very doable.
Very good. Not sure when Man United are playing on the weekend.
3 o'clock, Saturday.
When? 3 o'clock?
Yeah. They're doing a lot of 3 o'clocks this year.
Are they? Mm. Yeah. It was Wednesday night that they hosted Chelsea... In very much the pick of the midweek games, JJ, as you pointed out, because the colours on the screen are brilliant. Bright green pitch, deep bright reds and blues, the goalie in solid yellow, referee in black, white shorts and trim, boom.
It's really important to me. I've realised that one of the things I like most about football is the noise, both visually and what you hear, something about it. When you see a team, I think Brentford versus Brighton, the colours just don't look... There are too many things going on. It has to be clear and bright. And
aesthetically, it's a bit of a mess.
All that colour Spurs were wearing at City.
It's not for me. It has to be... I like when two home shirts play against each other because it's always like really opposed, contrasting.
Yes.
Like I spend a lot of my time for TIFO coming up with thumbnails and you have to work on how they work, and contrasting colours are really... what I've always liked, it turns out, but that really works on thumbnails for YouTube videos and things like that. And so when you see, like, there's another thing I read a long time ago, I can't remember where, but apparently a theory as to why the Premier League is so beloved around the world is that the kind of grass you get in England, works really well for how the color comes through on the cameras.
Oh.
So it pops like as a really nice deep green.
Mm. Yeah.
And so you get with like that game, Chelsea versus Man United, you have all the primary colors, but all just the basic ones. Then you need all of them to make it visually stimulating.
It's true. The first time a child walks up some steps and sees a Premier League pitch, it's almost worth having more children just so you can keep doing it. But there's some downsides.
Operative word being almost, yeah.
I mean, I still like that, and I go up the steps to a new stadium and you see it. It does look cool every time, right? Yeah.
Lovely. Old Trafford was the venue for this clash of primary colours, who were some way off the kind of primary positions. What did you see apart from lovely shades of hues?
I saw two teams in the first half who didn't really seem to know what they were doing. It was really open.
It was so bad.
It was so weird. They were... Because obviously, like, having grown up watching Man U Chelsea games in the past, it's a huge thing, and it's not really now, at the moment anyway. Maybe that'll change. But I wrote a list of players. I was just texting one of my friends' groups, like, players who were terrible in this game, and it was shorter to write the list of players who were actually any good. Who was good in this game?
Was Onana okay?
I don't really remember Onana doing anything wrong. He was decent. I mean, McTominay. But then would you keep McTominay? When you look at all these things, let's find out.
Generally speaking, though, compared to the game before against Newcastle, they actually had a go this time. They actually looked like they were bothered.
I mean, you have Garnacho on that left-hand side is making things happen. He's very dynamic, and that really helps. And Rashford hasn't really been doing that very much this season. He's been poor. But then you see the lack of... I think the Newcastle game is a really good example of just the amount of stuff you get done with good players working really, really hard. Like a good player working really, really hard is far more valuable, I would say, than an excellent player just sort of hoping that it happens. I think you see it a lot in five-a-side when you get the fancy players who think they're really good. If you get a bunch of players together who work harder, you'll always win. You'll almost always win with that sort of thing.
Which makes me angry about this fixture.
Oh.
Because in many ways, it shows the example of how badly managed, financially, economically speaking, teams can be. You had Enzo Fernandez and Moises Caicedo in this game.
Mm-hmm.
200 million plus. Did they make Chelsea better at this moment? Is that happening? Antony has already received so much criticism. There's talks about Erik ten Hag losing the dressing room. Mm. And we're talking about Scott McTominay, who I love. But he is such a classic old school player that really didn't cost anything.
I do like the way anyone mentions Scott McTominay, they always have to go, by the way.
I just want to say it on camera. I love him. But my point is that, you know, there are two teams right now who are just not, are they inspiring anything? Having said that, United only 3 points away from Man City.
They found a cheat code. There's some sort of, it's like the bit in Pac-Man where you can go in one side and come out the other. They've done that with the league table.
It's a wormhole in the table.
But I kept saying to myself during that game, 15 years ago, this was the Champions League final.
Correct.
And now it had the vibe of sort of a charity game. You know when you get a charity game played on a proper pitch when you're like, there's loads of chances because no one can actually defend.
I thought it felt like that as well. Like they... Yeah, it was like a charity event. Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it.
I want to shout out Cole Palmer, though. You can have your Scott McTominay. I'm very much Team Cole Palmer.
Lovely finish.
Yeah.
He revealed he was a Man United fan. John Champion on commentary was saying that he was a Man United fan. I didn't know that because he's played for Man City.
He did a muted celebration as well. He kind of like half celebrated, then sort of nodded at the Stretford end. So, you know.
He should have celebrated. It was his fifth goal for Chelsea.
I enjoyed also in this game the fact that United got a penalty purely because Antony can't use his right foot. Had a great chance to shoot, cut back onto his left because obviously, and then, you know, Enzo stood on his foot.
I'm surprised he gets anywhere in time because he must always walk in circles, that guy. Nicholas Jackson at Chelsea has the second highest non-penalty expected goals of any player in the league, but just cannot finish.
No.
And it's really interesting with him because I can't quite work out whether it is a lack of talent. I watched him, I did a lot of research on him before he moved to Chelsea to see what he was, and I really like what kind of player he is. But he's in the right place at the right time, but just constantly misses chances, and it almost seems as though it's belief, but how do you possibly get that belief into him? And it might just be that it's not going to happen there.
It's his arse, surely. His arse is the key component in all of this. You know, if one goes in off it,
or maybe,
it'll unleash, you know, a bit like Kai Havertz.
Needs to wear shorts lower.
Perhaps so. Man United, Schrodinger's Man United have Bournemouth at Old Trafford this weekend, while Chelsea, who don't appear to have turned that corner that we thought maybe they had done under Poch a week or two ago, are going to be away at Everton.
Manchester United, Bournemouth, obviously the only fixture in Premier League history that's been postponed because of a fake bomb. Remember that?
Ah, indeed so. Mm. That was a security drill.
Yeah.
A few days earlier,
and someone forgot. I always imagine that person must have been relaxing that day and then seeing, like, apparently there's a bomb at Manchester United. Must have thought, oh, that's probably my fault, yeah.
Also this midweek, Brighton beat Brentford 2-1. The winning goal coming from 18-year-old Jack Hinshelwood. His first senior strike. Brian Mbeumo picking up an injury in that game. How long is that going to keep him out for?
It could be a while. And obviously, AFCON's on the horizon as
well.
Oh,
that's true. Yeah. And it's Mbeumo as well. I keep calling him Mbeumo. It's Mbeumo, I believe. Mm. Bournemouth, we talked about their 2-0 win against Palace. They have actually now won 4 of their last 6 and almost won against Villa as well. So, woof. 5-0 for Fulham against Forest, who seem to have turned Raul Jimenez back into a goal machine.
4.6% of his Premier League career goals came last night, so fair play.
4.6% of his Premier League career goals, even including his Wolves
time? Yeah, yeah.
Really?
You'll never sing that?
Yeah.
Alex Iwobi was a good acquisition for Fulham. Like somebody that Marco Silva really needed in order to actually even help Raul Jimenez do his thing as well.
All right. Forest needs some help. They've won only one of their last 11 matches. And as we say, there is a lot of suggestions. There's going to be a regime change, possibly even by this weekend, when Forest will be making the trip to Molineux to take on Wolves. Wolves who did they beat? Was it Burnley?
Burnley
on Tuesday. Mm. Yeah. With Hwang Hee-chan's 9th goal of the season.
Tremendous player.
Mm.
Tremendous. He is he's like an old school type of attacker where very good technically, but he just does not stop running, does not stop creating chances. Really big fan of his.
Excellent.
Burnley caught out passing from the back in that game again. They're one of the teams that play really brave and it worked very well last season. And I wonder whether it's just because what they're doing makes sense on paper, but and probably on the training ground as well. But in execution, sometimes that's where they're getting caught.
Mm.
But they shouldn't change, even though it's probably going to take them down.
Do you think?
I think it's good to stay the same way and just play that way. I'd rather lose playing the way you want rather than deviating from it and getting
really
knocked out.
Evolving all that stuff.
Honestly, yeah. Weirdly,
Burnley had so many years of playing so functionally that I think they probably do have with their fans more credit for trying to stick with the principles than other clubs might do.
It's just a heavy touch from, I think it's Sander Berg, I think. He comes to try and receive it, and like a better player would know more what's on his shoulder. Someone else might be in a better position to pass off to, but that's just the Wolves wait for it, they pounce, they like Wolves do, I guess. Do Wolves pounce?
I think they can do when given the opportunity.
They hunt in packs.
They do.
No, you also have lone wolves,
lone
famously.
Wolves, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can have a pack of wolves.
They hunt pigs in houses.
Oh, yes, in I remember houses. That. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, they do, yeah.
Sticks.
They're very good at breath control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wolves are going to be facing Forest. Oh, as I mentioned.
The Red Riding Hood Classic.
Exactly, yeah. Did you know there's loads of bad blood between these two sides? Do you remember the big brawl
there was
in the League Cup last
Morgan
year?
Morgan Gibbs-White.
What happened?
Gibbs-White scored a penalty and kind of shushed all the Wolves fans. Obviously, he used to play for Wolves. And football fans are famously not happy at a player showing emotion. So, yeah.
And everyone kicked off.
Mm.
Everybody got charged in that one. Mm. Daniel Podence as well for like just going off. Crazy.
That's going to be Saturday, 3:00. And that is the weekend's fixtures, I think. There's other ones too, which we can't really preview. Like you got your Spurs against Newcastle, but neither of those teams have played yet. Thursday night, they go at it against West Ham and Everton respectively. But that's kind of the state of play on this Thursday, the 7th of December. A. Duncan.
Yeah, I think I quite like this set of fixtures we've had for a few years now, the Amazon showing all the games. Yeah, I think it's been good. And obviously we know that in a couple of years when the next TV deal comes in, that Amazon aren't going to be doing it, although we are going to be moving into a world 2:00 on Sundays, for instance, where all the games will be shown.
All the games.
So, but it's been a really, obviously 2 games to go as we record, but it's been a really good midweek set of action.
It has seminal. Been. Very, very entertaining. Very entertaining indeed. Particularly for you, Luis, eh?
I'm going to be listening to Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze.
Are you?
Well, I don't know, maybe.
Okay, no, it's great. I mean, why not?
I don't know, I'm just loving. I'm loving every minute of it. I'm loving the Villa. By the way, Copa America draw by the time this comes out.
Okay.
You could have a group that has Argentina,
mm-hmm.
Colombia,
uh-huh.
Venezuela, who are very good.
Uh-huh.
and Jamaica, Leon Bailey in the house, or the US, Uruguay, Chile, and Costa Rica. It's going to be final in Miami. It's going to be intense.
Right.
That's it.
Brilliant. Final in Miami in what month of the year?
It will be the same June.
Yeah.
No, well, July. I'm sorry. July. The same day as the Euro final.
Yeah. That's going to be exciting, isn't it?
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah. If the USMNT make it to the final, Christian Pulisic might melt at the end of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. All right, excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Aston La Vittoria Sempre.
Muy bien, James Richardson. Muy bien.
JJ, lovely to have you on today. And many thanks for all your illuminating observations.
Thank you.
And to you too, Duncan, with all your things that you did.
Yeah. Words.
We didn't mention the substitutes graphic they introduced at Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see they put substitutes? I wonder how hard someone pitched for that. They put
substitutes. Right. So I'm not. Hang I wasn't a fan of this. So they have little like five dashes above the team's name on the scorebug, and it was like everyone was confused, and then it was basically. But here's my contention: is that no one in football ever cared. No one's like, how many subs got left? Oh, we're down. And then at one point, I saw when a team had used all their subs, it flashed up no more subs. Or something like that. It's like,
but someone somewhere has really thought, do you know what's wrong with this modern football coverage? I don't know how many subs there are. What am I supposed to do?
Is that not more, we're a different coverage, we've got to stamp our identity on this?
Yeah,
probably. It's like moving it from up to the bottom making it upside down.
I mean, it's my favourite bit of a game. When you realise there's no more subs, you have a little tear and you're like, no, it can still be good.
Well, they need to do what they do in the NFL. At least NBC does it, which is when you do the lineup of from the offensive side. The player looks at the camera, says their name and what school they went to, what university. Obviously, but in the Premier League, it would be amazing if you just have every player just say their name and like their favorite
best bit of the game,
movie or something.
Yeah,
it'd be incredible.
Oh right,
What was the one you're in? Mutant what?
Erling Haaland, Mutant Chronicles.
Mutant Chronicles. JJ Ball. I wrote Santa. I took your ball.
Yeah, you made it way darker.
No. So. Great. That's it then, listener. Many thanks for sticking around this long. We'll be back on Sunday to review, the weekend stuff and that. So why not join us then? Your market duties permitting. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.